So, welcome, everybody. I told them that they don't need to do any prayers. Of course, you can do prayers. I'm very happy to be here and seeing my old friends is very good, very nice to me. And I was asked to talk about five Buddha families. I don't know how much it can be useful to talk about five Buddha families. But since you want me to talk about it, I'll say what I know. I really don't like this translation. Buddha families. When I say five Buddha families, Buddha families, I get a picture of a Buddha with lots of snotty children. Somehow, I'm sure that's not the case, but maybe that's why it comes to me. I don't like that. But that's how it is translated. And it's become something like kind of universally accepted somehow. Although, maybe family is not there in the original text. It's called Rik. Rik is not necessarily family. It also means that kinds, types, you can also say like different kind of lineages, kind of maybe tribe, you can say. Maybe that's why how it was translated as family. But what I like most is the aspect. Five other aspects. Because it's not necessarily five different kind of Buddhas. It's all these five different is supposed to be within us. And if I became enlightened, I would have all those five Buddha families in me. Or five Buddha. Sometimes this is very much connected with wisdom. By wisdom we talk about. By wisdom. It's a little bit, it's a Vajrayana thing, Vajrayana concept. we have to talk about Mother Nature. If we have to talk about this mother, five mother families, or five wisdoms, the idea is that every being has Buddha nature, not just human beings, but every being, everybody who has a consciousness, you can say if you like, has Buddha nature. Buddha nature means that the way their consciousness is ultimately exactly the same as that of a fully enlightened Buddha. Whether it's me, whether it's you, whether it's anybody, totally kind of insignificant being. The true nature of their consciousness is the same quality, or same type, or same like that of the Buddha. And that is why it is possible that all of us, all of us, can and would, you know, eventually become enlightened. Only difference from that point of view is that that we don't recognize that, we don't experience it, we don't see it, because of our, we call it defilement. We are too, you can call it ignorant if you like. We don't know how to look at it, or how to feel it, or how to experience it. That's why we don't experience it. But if we somehow learned how to look for it, how to see it, then we would be able to experience that, and then we are for that. That's why in this very important book, it's translated as Buddha Natures. Its original title is Uttara Tantra Shastra Jivanama. Says that there's nothing to get rid of, there's nothing to bring in if you can look at it as it is, then you are. So, from that point of view, actually what we say and what we think, and we have lots of, you know, negativity things and all kinds of things, we have to purify all of them, and then we have to, you know, kind of train and do lots of positive things, and then all, you know, In a way, it is also true, because you don't understand it or see it, but in actual fact, there's nothing. We just have to experience it. And once we experience truly and completely, then, you know, all our problems are easy. Sounds a little too easy. So the basic, actually the basic thing, I mean the practical is like our ego, our you know, what we think I am, what we think I am. The way we react to our, you know, sense of I am, is the problem, is the basis of our, what we call samsara. Because we see it in a very dualistic way, you know, I am. There is something called me, in me. And that me is somewhere there, you know, inside me. And therefore, you know, I am here, so everything is there. You are there, everybody is there, and everything is there. And so therefore, if I experience something, if I see something that's nice, then I want that. If I see something not nice, I don't want it. And then I'm always running, either to get what I want or get rid of what I don't want. And then I'm so busy that I have no time for anything else. And then I totally tie myself up, and then I complain to everybody. And that's samsara. And that samsara is great because I don't understand what I, my consciousness, my, you know, my feeling of I don't understand what it is. I think it's something there, separate from everything else. I have it inside me, and I feel very, you know, very threatened, you know, if somebody doesn't look at me when I'm walking. Yeah, upset. He's not seeing me, you know. You can't see it, but he doesn't see me. You know, it's so bad. Do I not exist? We feel very threatened, you know, we feel very insecure, always insecure. Almost like if somebody doesn't say something good about me, somebody doesn't acknowledge me, somebody, you know, I feel I am totally kind of rejected. So much aversion, attachment, and all kind of things happen because of this. But that itself is actually the Buddha nature. There's nothing else. We just have a little bit, you know, that awareness, that consciousness, that kind of the clarity of feeling, you know, experience something that knows, is the basis, the same thing. But that's why, you know, in Vajrayana, actually, this is the main thing. how to recognize this, how to look at this, how to transform it. You know, sometimes they say your ego is bad. You know, ego, yeah. Actually, you have an ego, but we don't have to get rid of it. We can't get rid of our ego. We have to transform it. We have to understand it in a different way. What is the nature of that? And we think, why? How that really exists? And what is it? So if we could somehow look at it in a very kind of clear way, and again, this becomes a little bit difficult, because when we say you look at yourself, so who is it you look at yourself? There's nobody. You can't find anybody to look at. You can't say there are two things that somebody's looking at. And if you analyze it, it's just concept, making another concept. So therefore, it becomes difficult. That's why it becomes very difficult to understand. So therefore, you know, if we could somehow just find a way, I can't say how, because if I did know, I would be enlightened. If you could just relax and completely, you know, aware, but not, you know, not with any concept, but directly experientially be aware of ourselves, then we might actually experience the way we are, which is very, you know, which might give us a totally different perspective. Which is like same as what Buddha expressed, and also many, you know, great masters expressed. Buddha, when he became enlightened, he said something like this. I found an Amrita. Amrita is a legendary substance, which if you drink, gives you complete deathlessness. You know what you call it? Immortality. I found that the kind of immortality, something immortality, something that gives. And then he said, it's very deep, it's profound, complete in peace. And it cannot be grasped by any kind of any kind of intellectual experience. And it's clear light, it's luminous. and it's ungraded. And that's the true nature of us. That's actually our own, what we call me, is that. But when we say me, I'm kind of thinking about something inside me, something different from everything else. But actually, it's not different from everything else, it's everything else. Because when we experience anything, when we see something, I think I see that. But actually, seeing is not, not that. Seeing is my experience. Hearing is my experience. Everything that I experience is my experience. It's not that something, there's something there, and I have something there, and then I have, there's some kind of activity going on, seeing. But this is not very easy to understand. And then we react with all kinds of anger and hatred and greed and attachment and jealousy and with misunderstanding with all kinds of things. So those, even those negative emotions, which is actually, if you look deeply, there's nothing negative. If we become negative because we make this dualistic way of seeing things. So therefore, to kind of that's why it is said. This is where it becomes difficult. There is all these negative emotions, like five pleasures. If you understand truly how they are wisdom. And as we have five very slightly different negative emotions. It could be called five wisdoms. It's not totally different also. And that five wisdoms is actually five enlightened qualities. And that five enlightened qualities are sometimes called five aspects of Buddha. That's it. that's five for the families. And this is, this becomes very important in practice of Vajrayana, because that makes the mandala. That makes the whole experience. Mandala means that everything. All experience, if I can say that. The experiencer is also there. What you experience is also there. All kinds of different experiences is also there. The chief is there, the ministers are there, the army, everything is actually, the whole thing is actually, it's not many things, it's all kind of radiation of one. You can't even say one. Because there's nothing called one. All this experience is just an experience, and that's it. And so therefore there's nothing called negative. That's the whole point. There's nothing called negative. Everything is perfect, right from the beginning. And therefore there's actually nothing to purify. There's nothing to achieve, nothing just to recognize. No. But that is very difficult for us. We have this very strong, you know, habitual tendency that I, you know, like this one thought, she was a chicken. This story of chicken, you know, chicken. Once one laid the egg in the chicken's kind of, I don't know if chicken really has a nest, you know, chicken's kind of place. Put an egg in the chicken's eggs, you know. And then chicken comes and sits on it, you know. She has to sit for a very long time. How many weeks? 6 weeks. I think something like that. I knew very well because I was sleeping next to, you know, the chicken's eggs was next to my pillow for many times. And the chicken cannot not sit on, you know, has to sit on. When the time comes, has to sit. Day and night. And then one day you hatch, usually at night. And then you can hear this. And every night sticker is hungry as soon as they come out. Not like us. We are the worst. Not like chicken. Not like calf, not like horse, not like any. We are the worst. Even dog. You know, what's it? Dog what?
Puppy.
Puppy is also, you know, the puppy can't see sometimes. It's kind of blind. You know? Can't see for a while. So, still. Anyway, that's not the point. So this, you know, this chick, which was like actually a swan, thought that she was a chicken because she was following the chicken, and then with all other chicken, and then the chicken, you know, hen said, "Oh, don't go near the pond, because you will fall into the water, and then, you know, you will drown, you cannot swim. Or don't try to fly, because you seem to have a feather, but that's not, you know, your wing is totally useless. It will fly, you know, things like that." So that was going after, you know, I'm taking a chicken. You know. But then you grew up. But you didn't know that he was a swan. So it followed the chicken. Another swan came and said, "What are you doing here?" "What do you mean? What are you doing here? I'm a chicken. And I'm just like my mother and my brother and sister." He says, "You're not a chicken." "Who says I'm not a chicken? I'm a chicken. Of course I'm. Let's go." So it took such a long time for this other to make her go near the, you know, near the water. "So I can't go near the water because I fall down and I can't swim. You know, I'm a chicken." And so after a long, long time, then just went to there. And then no Who's this? What is this? Because he had long nails, you know. And still, no, 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 I can't fly. How can I fly? I can't swim. You know? So it's like that. That's supposed to be like that. You know? So that's why we need to be introduced, we need to be taught, we need to practice, we need to convince ourselves, we need to work on it. And plus we need to think it all. I'm the Buddha. Visualize yourself. Although I know I'm not a Buddha, but I have to. Something like that. Train. So these five wisdoms, actually five wisdoms, is there are names for it, but I don't know if you are interested in that. Talk about five wisdoms. What is it? Chun Yeshi is like Chun is very difficult to translate. You can't really translate. So we retain the Sanskrit word Dharma, Dhatu, the wisdom of Dharma. How Dharma-dhatu is kind of the Dharma. Dharma here means everything that anybody can think about. Everything is Dharma. Dharma has many words, many meanings. The word Dharma has many meanings. Yin is like the space. So the wisdom of means, you know, like that. Our ignorance, the way we don't actually understand what we are. You know, that's kind of not clarity, unclarity. Not understanding, misunderstanding, whatever you call it. Yes, that's our ignorance. But if we actually could really see that clearly, the way we are, then it's the wisdom of the mind. Then there's nothing more to see, there's nothing more to know, there's nothing. You know, it's just doesn't have to be all these concepts that we have. I am, you are, is there, everything is there, not there, it's existing, it's not existing. All these concepts is just concepts, and we are so caught up in these concepts that we don't really know what is it. So if we somehow can to secret, that's the wisdom of. Then there's nothing called ignorance, there's nothing called not knowing. Everything is clear. That's why that's the middle. Yeah. The Buddha, very similar, Buddha of, you know, what they call it. Buddha wisdom. Then there is all this our reaction to aversion, our reaction to and hatred, all kind of this is an end. It's a, you know, because we said this is me, this is others, and everything, you know, that's what's happening. I don't like, I don't want, you know. So if you look deeply into that, that way of reacting, actually it's just being unclear. If you really see clearly, there's nothing to be angry about, there's nothing to be upset about. So if you understand that, that's what we call mirror-like wisdom. Because mirror is very clear. You see that whatever mirror, your own self is reflected. And, you don't need to fight with the thing in the mirror. Then, you know, mirror-like wisdom, Ratna, that's called Nyambadichyeshi, the wisdom of equanimity. That's the our kind of pride and arrogance, you know, kind of pride is not necessarily I'm the best. It's also that, but you know, I am separate from everything else. I am different. I exist on my own, kind of this thing, you know. That experience is actually another kind of wrong way of seeing. And if I really understand that this is, you know, it's not exactly that is, you have your consciousness is actually experiences everything. And you know, even the very something you see, something that you don't like, is actually your own experience of seeing that. It's not this something. What I like or what I don't like. It's just your own experience. You kind of, you experience something, and then you make it that you don't like. You decide somehow it's very bad. Then you say, oh, I want to get rid of it. It's very difficult to get rid of it because it's my own creation. You know? The aversion is my aversion. Attachment is my attachment. So therefore, you know, I can't just erase it. Nobody can erase it for me. So therefore, if I really understand that, then it's wisdom of equanimity. In the same way, then, wisdom of discernment. Like, I'm sometimes very much attached to something, you know, all kind of greed, attachment, and, actually, who is it in me that can be attached to what? Because it's all in my experience. So therefore, when you understand this clearly, there is no one there who is attached, who can be attached to anything. Yeah. And who, because if you have attachments, then you have to be there has to be something separate there. It is attached to something separate. But this, you can't find it because everything is actually your own is anything that's not in my experience, no? We think that I experienced that wall, or I experienced that person. But I cannot experience that thing or that person if it is not within my experience. So therefore, you know, it's very difficult. So that's why wisdom of discernment and wisdom of what they call all accomplishment. That's kind of when we deeply understand our mentality of envy and jealousy and things like that. You know, we can take something somebody has. We have envy. But actually, that means that I feel I don't have, I am not so good. I am less good than something, or have less than something. You know? But actually, that's another concept, another experience. So if you really deeply understand this, there's nothing I can believe. So, there's nothing that I have not accomplished. Or this, I, you know, it's not something that's all these things, it's just concept. So when you have all these five wisdoms, then you have become a Buddha. You become enlightened. But so this then, you know, this experience. Of course, we all have, you know, each person has different traits. In some people, one negative emotion is stronger. In another person, another negative emotion is stronger. Yeah. There are different kinds of people, different kinds of, you know, like there are some people who can see very clearly. Some people who can, you know, who can kind of, whose mind kind of, who cannot see in their light, but who can, you know, who can hear very clearly. Some people who can feel most strongly. Things like that. So therefore, you know, sometimes we have different aspects of people. We need different approaches to train. So therefore, in the Vajrayana kind of methods, lots of different skillful means are given for different type of beings to use different technologies or different. So therefore sometimes you know, when you receive an empowerment, then you kind of you throw a lottery in which kind of other family you belong to. You know? And sometimes, you know, you kind of train in that way, you know, or something like this. Yes, I don't know whether it works like that exactly. So this is, you know, Buddha families, five Buddha families, and sometimes five Buddha families also, you know, like transformation of your five skandhas is also. As the five Buddha families. You know. Skandhas is is another limit, way of looking at things which is quite foreign to most people, I think. In Buddhism, we talk about five skandhas. That's how, what a person is. A person is five skandhas. There's form, the body, form. This is my form, what you can look at. Then the, it's, you can say body and mind. And body is the form. And mind, maybe you can say it, but this is also, you can communicate because everything is integrated, not totally separate. But mind can be divided into next four. Well, consciousness. You can say consciousness. That's the mind. Form, body, and mind. Now, mind, you can divide into three. One is your perception, like cognition. You see, you sense, you understand something. You have the feeling, I see, I understand, I the cognition, perception. Then there is feelings. We have feelings like happiness, unhappiness, or comfortable, discomfort, or nothing. No feeling. And like heavy feeling, light feeling, different kind of feelings. That's one experience. That's another. It's a mind, but observe by cognition. Then there is emotions and kind of more deeper level of experience. Volitions, they call it sometimes. Deep feeling. Sometimes it's called like nice place to live in. We want our society to be peaceful and joyful and great. We need to just learn how to be kind to each other. If you did that, that will transform the world. And so therefore, how do we do that? We have to do it by ourselves. We can't say, oh, you won't become kind and nice. Like this. This story I heard, you have heard this, I'm sure you have heard this before. Myself told it many times, but it's a Scottish story. I haven't seen it, but they said that there is one tombstone of a priest in Edinburgh. Any of you have seen? It is said that in that tombstone it's written like this. That when I was young, the priest wanted to write that. I don't know if this is exact words, but something like this. He said that when I was young, I wanted to change the world. And I prayed to Lord God Please give me the wisdom and power to change the world. And I tried my best. But when I became older, I saw that nothing changed. Nobody changed. But then I understood that in order to change the world, I have to first change my dear and near ones. And if they changed, taking them as an example, the world would change. Then I prayed to Lord God, please give me the wisdom and power to change my dear and near ones. And I tried my best. But when I became very old, I found out that nobody changed. But now I understand that in order to change my dear and near ones, first I have to change myself. If I change myself, then taking me as an example, most probably my dear and near ones will change. And taking them as an example, the world will change. Now I pray to Lord God, please, Lord God, give me wisdom and power to change myself. But alas, it's a little too late. Haven't you seen this? It's supposed to be in Edinburgh somewhere. I don't know if it is just somebody's imagination. It's a little bit like that, no? We have to, you know, they say that. You have to become, change yourself. It's like that. So, and that's the practice. That is the practice. So, you know, it's a, I don't know, sometimes we have lots of different practices in this. I don't know, some of them are a little bit complicated. I can actually have practices and things like that. And if you really understand deeply, I think it is quite deep. But it's not so easy to understand. And if you can't understand, then it will be like deep. But there are other ways, many other ways, simple ways. I think the real practice, you know, many people ask, what practice should I do? Should I do Shenzhen? Should I do, you know, Dara? Should I do Lojong? Should I do Mahamudra? Should I do Karachakra? Should I do Triyakti? Should I do, you know, I say, this is what I believe. I am my practice. You are your practice. This, all these things are methods. If you really understand that, and if you think that this is going to work on me, you do it, but it's method. Real practice is myself. I have to transform myself. So how do I transform myself? Looking at myself. Only tool I have is my mindfulness. And mindfulness is that I become aware of what's going on. You know, I can't be aware all the time. Now and then, you know, I look at myself. What's going on in me? How I am thinking? How I am reacting? What emotions am I? What I am saying, what I am acting. And then I will remember if I am doing this, and I know that this is what I am, you know, in my mind or in infections. And I remember that this, if I do, or if I act, it's not good for me. It's not good for others. It's not good for now. It's not good for me. That's mindfulness. You know? To be aware and to remember what you need to do. That's mindfulness. When your mindfulness catches this, then you just, you know, if I'm doing something not so good, I say, it's okay, I don't need to do this. I can relax, I can let go. However strong my emotion, my desire, it's temporary. It's always changing. So if I allow, it will go. So if it is a positive thing, positive feeling, positive action, positive emotion, then I happy myself. I rejoice at myself. I congratulate myself. Then I should, if I don't congratulate myself, who will? Nobody is going to to wait for somebody to appreciate his future. So I need to appreciate myself and be happy with that. And then, then it's not. We learn more by appreciation than by punishment. We never learn by punishment. So this is how it is. That is, we keep on doing this whenever we are on that, and that is practice. That's practice. There's nothing else to do. If you want to say prayers and mantras and all these things, yes. Why not? But sometimes you can do real good practice without saying mantras. How much practice you have to do, it does not depend on how many prayers you're doing, or how many, you know, sessions of things I'm doing. It's more how I am working on myself. I think that's the main thing. So that's it. I think I have nothing else to say. If you have any questions, so I agree on that, you are most welcome. Yes.
Talking about the wisdom of discernment, I always find that quite difficult to understand. Is it a relationship with the absolute truth and the relative truth there when you're discerning?
This is, you know, when we are talking about what is called Tibetan, is this what is the word? That word is you know. I am getting old. I was remembering just a few moments ago, and it's called actually means that it's very clear that not necessarily. I don't know if it's, you know, of course you can. It could be also, you know, relative and absolute and things like that. But it is more like that. Really, the word is, I should first remember.
Perspicacious?
Perspicacious, I've heard you use before. No, it's, let me remember that word. That you can clearly see, you know, social components. You see each one as, you know, separately, clearly, you know, not mixed up, not.
Distinct.
When you see, I mean, you can talk about that also. What should I say? Relative. But actually, you know, like when you are attached to things, you know, it's a little bit confusing. You love someone and you wish good, you should wish bad. But you kind of try to hold on to grasp things. Yeah? Attachment is like I try to control. You know? And I don't want to give, you know, freedom. But actually, when you love someone, you should give freedom, no? So therefore, this kind of, you know, there is love, but something else comes into mind, and then you kind of, you know, you strangle that being. And then, you know, you have also attachment to greed. And you know, greed is something totally foolish, actually. I was watching a movie. I think I talked about this a few times, maybe some of you remember. One of this, the most best English movie ever. You know, not the second best. You know, what's it called?
The World Is Not Enough.
Uh-huh. No. It's 007. For James Bond, I like James Bond. You know, many English and Irish filmmakers are complaining. Why people don't watch our movies? They only watch this, you know, American. I said, I understand why you make it so boring. You don't accept James Bond. There's no accent, there's all talking. The first best English movie is Mr. Beans. Oh. When I first discovered, I nearly died. I couldn't control my stomach. In one of these James Bond, movie, was that, there was one scientist, very high intelligent scientist, and he met a nuclear bomb-proof something under the sea. He had a place under the sea that even a nuclear bomb just doesn't do anything. And then he tried to make war between Russia and America so that there will be a nuclear war. And then when there's a nuclear war, everybody on Earth will die. Then he will be the owner of the whole Earth. And that was his plan. But thanks. Mr. James Bond. But I was thinking that time, if you own the whole world because nobody was there, what would you do with it? I mean, what would you do? You can't even show off. Because there's nobody to show off. Maybe, when you have lots of things, and the main purpose is to show off, otherwise you cannot use that. But when there is not even somebody to show off, then what's the use? But if you are too much greedy in the death, it becomes like that. Totally confused. What you want doesn't make sense. Yes.
How important is it for someone trying to practice Dharma to abstain from alcohol?
I think even if you are not practicing Dharma, to stay. It's good for you, I think, because, if you, little bit is okay, but if you get intoxicated, then it ruins your health, it ruins your pocket. it's not good. And from Buddhist point of view, when you are intoxicated, then you have no kind of your sense of, judgment of what is right and wrong also goes, So therefore then you can do lots of negative things because you don't know, you are not in your own right kind of sense. So I think it's very important to try to be not intoxicated.
So, when you see who you are looking, your perception through the concepts, how do you stop being that person? person, even if you can see that that is who you're becoming, when you discover some of the concepts that that's hiding your true nature, or that's grown through your nature, right? How do you actually, is it a decision not to be that person, or every day you release
it's
that?
It's nothing to do with that person or this person.
No, okay.
It's just you're not who your person is, but
yeah.
You don't need to make those kind of mistakes that you usually make.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. It's nothing, they are not two different people.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sono